We are in this beautiful text called Manashodhanam. Mana means mind, and Shodhanam means purification of the mind. So in the first 10 verses, I'll just summarize, there are a few new people here. They say that we are all a manifestation of that divinity, that one Father who has created us all out of himself. And we all have that divinity in us, which here has been shown as Om, and we all are part of that infinite truth, goodness, which is God. But I don't experience that. I feel myself to be a sorrowful individual. I have all these problems. And what is the reason? They say that, why don't I feel that I am that immortal truth? Why can't I say like Jesus, that me and the Father in heaven are one, even though we are all one with him? But we don't feel that. What is special between a prophet and me? What is the difference? They are also human. They also walk on two legs. They also have two eyes and nose. The main reason we do not feel that I am that essence, and the main reason we don't experience that joy, that is, the Lord is all joy, all bliss, all merciful, all kind. I don't experience that because of my vasanas, which are my negative tendencies, which is the impurities of the mind, which is the dirt of the mind. Just as a glass, if it's covering the window, the sunlight cannot shine through if it is black. And similarly, the dirt or the impurities in my mind do not allow me to experience that sunlight, that light within, that joy within. This book is devoted towards removing the impurities of the mind. It first describes what are the impurities and then how to remove them. And without removing them, you cannot progress, not only spiritually, but even in the world. If you want to be successful in business, you have to have some purity of mind. You have to have a goal to climb a mountain, to win the Olympics, to make a great discovery, to write a good book. You have to have some purity of mind. You have to have calmness of the mind to achieve anything. So, especially in the spiritual field. And then we had talked about some of the techniques, you know, like chanting the name of the Lord, associating with good people, reading good books, going on pilgrimages, doing some penance, like fasting and spending some time in the prayer and all that. And they say out of that, knowledge is the best way. To know what is the impurity is the best way to remove it. So knowledge is the best technique, and that we had studied in the last 2 weeks about the nature of this knowledge and how and why. Knowledge is very important. And those who have come for the first time should buy this book. Diana has them, and you can read the verses that we have done up to 10. But I just briefly summarized. So then the question comes, what are these impurities? They keep talking about purify the mind, purify the mind. But what are the impurities? And so we'll do it in the verse number 11, which is in page 24. So today we'll talk about what is the dirt that I need to clean. Verse number 11, page 24. Raga dvesha daya kamaha. Daya kamaha. Krodha lobha dayo picha. Ahamkarastatha swarthaha. Vividha manaso malaha. So manaso malaha. These are the, mala means dirt, manasa means of the mind, vividha. These are the varieties. So in this list, which I have put on the board, They have only listed a few in this particular verse, but then they say Adi, etc. So we'll just cover some of them, like Raga Dvesha. Raga Dvesha means likes and dislikes, excessive attachment and hatred. And then Adiya means etc. And then Kama. Kama means desire. Krodha. Krodha means anger. And Lobha means greed. Adi, so etc. So they are saying that there are a lot of them. These are only a few samples have been given. In fact, you yourself sitting down can come up with 20 more easily. And these are not on the board. We each one of us has them. These are within each one of us, our mind. One may have less, one may have more. But all of us have these impurities. If we didn't have these impurities, we would be a Jesus, or we would be a Buddha, or Swami Chinmayananda, or Shankaracharya, or Guru Nanak. We would be a great saint or a prophet. The fact that we are, all of us are sitting here, because we have these impurities and we need to remove them. Adi, etc. And then he says, Ahankar. Ahankar means ego, and Swartha means selfishness. So these are all the impurities of the mind. Today I'll try to cover these ones listed in black. The ego is a topic by itself. It might take about 3-4 hours. So next week be prepared to sit till 10 o'clock. No, actually I'll try to cover ego in a half hour talk separately. So we'll do that, and maybe not next week. Next week actually we have a guest speaker. But in 2 weeks when we meet, I'll try to cover ego in about half hour, because it's a very interesting and a very important subject. I personally feel that one has to know that. So let us start with likes and dislikes. Or let us start with impurities of the mind. Why do we need to remove them? You say, I have some likes and dislikes. I have little desire. Once in a while I get angry. So what? What's wrong? It's like saying that I have a nice white cloth, you know, a nice blouse or a white pure shirt, but then there is a black mud suddenly falls, or a black paint or some black ink. And you say, it's okay, you know, so what? You know, one little spot. No, you know, a nice white shirt and has this black spot. Everybody is looking at that. So first thing you want to do is go home, take it off and wash it and remove that dirt. Or suppose you are walking around and somebody says, you know, there is a black spot on your chin. How did you get it? Now, you're not going to tell them, there is a black spot on my chin. I'll remove it after I turn 65. That's what we say, you know, spirituality I'll do after I turn 65. No, I'll go home, right? I'll go to the nearest mirror and wash it off and clean it. So just as the physical impurities of your face or an impurity in your shirt, One wants to remove it. Impurity of the mind, it's even more important that one has to remove it. It has to be done right away. It has to be done instantly. It has to be, that is the number one requirement for a spiritual seeker, is to purify the mind. And all the teachers tell that when you sit for meditation, we are here in a meditation class. And why you're not talking meditation, you're talking impurities of the mind. But when you sit for meditation, if your mind has a lot of desires or anger or greed or jealousy or hatred or likes and dislikes, then all the time you're thinking, oh, I don't like this person, and why does he do this, and what happened? And then, you know, this person has gone ahead of me in my business or in my job. And so your mind is all the time thinking about people or about possessions or about... And so the mind cannot sit for meditation. How can you sit for meditation when your mind has so much negativity in it? How can you sit for prayer? It's the same thing. You go in front of the Lord, and right away, instead of the image of the Lord, you are seeing the image of your enemy. And, you know, that becomes, he comes in front of that. Instead of seeing Jesus or Krishna or Buddha, you are seeing the... So they say that impurities of the mind should be removed. And as I said, these are only a few. But actually, if you start listing them, there is a whole buffet of impurities. Just as, you know, you go to Las Vegas, there is a buffet, all you can eat. So we have a buffet of impurities, all you can suffer. So impurities are there, and it is very important to make an attempt to remove them. The other problem is that each one of us finds the other's impurities. They say, yeah, you know, my husband, he has a lot of anger. He should read this book. You know, I must go home and show this to my husband or my wife or, you know, or my neighbor or my co-worker. But we have to be very honest. You have to be your own critic and look within and say, do I have any of these? And if I do, honestly, I have to look at them, and then I have to make an attempt to to remove them. So let us cover a few. Now, likes and dislikes. Now, where do likes and dislikes come from? I like something, I dislike something, I like some person, I dislike some person. It comes from vastness. It comes from my tendencies or my desires. Those who are new, we will be covering this chart and in the orientation, but it is my desires or my tendencies that creates likes and dislikes. So what is conducive to my desires? What is conducive to my tendencies, I like. And what is not conducive, I don't like, whether it's an object, whether it's a person, even the weather. You know, if I if I like heat, and then now this kind of weather is going on, I say, I am so miserable. Or if I have moved here from Montana or, you know, somewhere, or Minnesota, and then I'm getting 110 degrees in the summer. So whatever is conducive to my desires is what I like. And then what is not conducive, I do not like. And then what we do is we spend the rest of our life chasing after things we like and running away from things we dislike. And so you are constantly running after things I like and things I love and things I want. And then things I don't like, you know, so like one person wants to divorce a person. Why? Because I just don't like her. I can't stand her. And another guy next door is waiting. When can they divorce? So he's just waiting. So likes and dislikes is what drives us. And what we find is that things that we dislike or we try to run away from, they show up again and again, no matter how much you try. So that's what they say, that go beyond likes and dislikes and see where is the source of I like somebody, I don't like. It is because of my inner prejudices, my inner tendencies. So slowly get over them and realize that, of course, it does not mean that, you know, that in the food or in the things, but even having strong dislikes or likes, whether in food or people or clothes or objects, or slowly get over them and realize that these are the ones that are pulling my mind, you know, stressing it, and get over it. If there are people whom I don't like, it's okay. That God is in everybody. See the Lord in them. See the good in them. And slowly, if you don't have to love him, but at least you can not hate that person. Because when you hate some person or when you dislike some person, what it does is it creates negativity in your mind. It creates anger. It creates agitation in the mind, because whenever you see that person, your mind gets disturbed and you say, I just can't stand him. And so the more you do that, what it does is you are sending a negative tendency to that person. I don't like him. Even if you don't say it, but your facial expressions or even your inner thoughts come out, and that creates a further negative reaction. So it goes on and on. So one has to slowly develop a equanimity and do not have strong likes and dislikes. Reduce them as much as possible and accept things as they are. So once you start accepting things, then automatically your likes and dislikes reduce. The next one is desire. And along with desire, we have anger and greed. And then I have put etc. So desire arises from a sense of incompleteness, because I don't realize that I am that infinite being. I am that infinite creation. I am that pure soul who at this moment is occupying this body. But in reality, I am pure. I am good. I am kind. I am loving. I am perfect. We all are perfect creations of the Lord, even though, yes, everybody has some problems, some defects. But those are the defects either of the body or of the mind, maybe emotionally or intellectually. But my true nature, what I really am inherently, is that perfect soul. So centered on that perfect soul, then you feel a sense of completeness. But not knowing that, and that is what this book will tell us as we go along, I think of myself as being this incomplete individual with this particular name and this particular form and this particular color, whether I have Anil or Tom or whatever my name is, whatever my profession is, whatever my job is. And so I just focus on that and not forget about that I am that infinite soul. And so because I feel myself to be incomplete, I think that this particular object will make me complete, or this particular person will make me complete, or this particular, if I move to a new house, it will make me complete, or a new job, or a new wife, you know, wife number four, or a new state, or a new country. People say, I'm tired of this country. I'm going to move to Europe. Why in Italy? You know, my forefathers were from there. I'm going to go there. So we keep changing jobs, keep changing situations, keep changing places. Why? Because thinking that this will make me happy. And what happens is desire breeds anger and breeds greed. Now I wanted something and I didn't get it. I wanted a job and I didn't get it, or I wanted a particular object and somebody else got it first. Or I wanted it, I didn't have enough money to buy it, or my spouse didn't let me get it, or whatever. Then if I don't get it, I get angry. And anger is one of the major negativities and impurities of the mind, because they say anger is like a fire. First of all, it burns you more than it burns the person you are angry against. The person whom you're angry at may not even know that you are angry. Sometimes, you know, you are inside you are boiling, but outside you can't say anything because that person happens to be your boss, or, you know, or somebody whom you can't speak. So anger is the one that practically should never be cultivated. But people think anger is good. You know, in this world, unless you get angry, you don't get your way done. And nowadays, even in movies, they glorify, you know, this angry young man that is glorified in every movie. There's this hero whose sister was either molested by the villain, or parents were killed and their property was stolen. And so he says, okay, and that guy has become a rich multimillionaire and he controls, you know, he's a mobster. And this single angry young man, you know, then he decides, okay, I'm going to take revenge. And one by one, he destroys the hero and villains all. So that is in every movie. You know, probably at least I can count 10 movies. So they glorify anger. You know, it's okay to be angry. Yeah, very, very rarely you may have to use anger, but that the occasions are very rare. The same thing, you can do it very kindly, even to your child. If you want to tell the child something, it will be more effective, especially as they become older and they become teenagers. If you get angry, you're going to have a negative effect. So the same thing can be said politely, can be said nicely. And if even by mistake, if you got angry at somebody and you say, oh, you know, I that is one of the impurities, then what one has to do is that, okay, I made the mistake one time, but I'm not going to be making it again. So be very alert and find the root of the anger. And as I said, the root of the anger is desire, because I wanted something and didn't get it. It could be I wanted my way. I wanted my child to behave in a particular way and it didn't happen. So when I don't get it, it breeds anger. And when I get it, the result is greed. Okay, I got, you know, $10,000, now I want $20,000, now I want $100,000, now I want $1,000,000, now I want $2,000,000. There's no end. You know, there is no end. That's what Mahatma Gandhi said. He said, there is enough in the world for everybody's needs. There's enough in this world for everybody's needs, but there is not enough in the world for one man's greed. Even if one greedy man will never be satisfied, even if he gets everything that is in this world. So greed is the one, then it is accompanied by other friends. Along with greed comes covetousness. You know, I have it, I don't have it, but my neighbor has it, so how can I get it? I don't have this, my company is small and my, you know, the competition's company is bigger. How can I acquire that company? How can I? And then I use all fair means, I use all foul means, I use all dishonest means, whatever it takes to destroy that person. And then all those, then jealousy comes in. You know, why, if somebody is better than me, then I get jealous. Oh, why is this person so good? And I don't have it. And then all the time at home, I'm thinking about it and I'm dwelling upon it and I'm making myself miserable. And then on the other side of the coin is that if I have more than somebody else, then that etc. comes as vanity, as pride, as a false pride. Look, I have it and he doesn't have it. And then I walk by in front of him, showing my new necklace or my new ring or my new car or my new golf club. So we brag. So all those things come with it. Along with the desire comes all this: anger, greed, covetousness, dishonesty, all those things. So a lot of these negativity, that's why we have put etc. That's why even in the book it says etc. As I said, there is a whole line of these that each and every one of us can think of. And then, of course, the one that is kind of at the heart of everything is selfishness. Again, selfishness comes because of all of these put together create selfishness. When I desire something and I have it, then I become selfish. I must have it, nobody else must have it. And that's when we, try to patent it, try to monopolize it, try to acquire everything, all of it, and don't share it. And why? So that I can show off to that other person, or I can brag to the other person, or I can feel, or like paintings, that in fact some people steal paintings, and that there are other millionaires who will buy the paintings. And these are like very expensive paintings from the museums, and they cannot even display it, because the moment they display it, they keep it locked up in their safe and they're happy. Oh, I have this painting that nobody else has in the world. So all these negativities, when they are put together, and I'm sure if I ask you all, I'm sure you can list a few more negative qualities that we all possess, which need to be wiped, which need to be cleaned out. And as I said, we are of the nature of bliss, we are of the nature of joy, and so one has to take an active step. It cannot happen just by itself, it's okay, I'll just get rid of it. As I said, look at the source. Where did these negativities come from? And then watch how one leads to another. In the Gita, it says very clearly that desire and anger are the two pathways to hell. Because it is written very clearly. So what they're saying is that all of these desires, and hell is not only a place where I go after death, but in this life itself, your life becomes hell. If you have all this, if you have anger and if you have jealousy, and then your mind is restless and you are unhappy, and then, you are fighting and you are competing. So they say that the person who can get rid of these, and that's what it says, the scripture says, that if you can get rid of them in this life itself, you can experience heaven. You don't have to die and go somewhere up where there are angels playing and harps and all that. You can enjoy that joy of heaven right here. You can enjoy the bliss of heaven, because ultimately the joy, the bliss is within. You are that nature of bliss. But not understanding that I am of the nature of bliss, I put bliss upon an object, that by getting this particular object, I'll be happy, or this person, I'll be happy, or going away from this person, I'll be happy. So not realizing, and then we keep on chasing after happiness through our likes and dislikes, through our desires, and life becomes an endless race, an endless rat race. So they say, get out of the rat race. And we are not saying that one should not be try to be successful or not try to be to do good. Yeah, you have to be successful. You have to be good at what you are. Then only you can help others. If you are yourself a failure in life, then you cannot help anybody. But at the bottom of that, there should be two or three things. One is a contentment. That, oh Lord, whatever you have given me, thank you very much. An attitude of gratitude, an attitude of contentment, and an attitude of fulfillness, that I am okay as I am. And that is very important, that I am fine the way I am. And then when you yourself are complete, then only you can share with others, whether you can share your money or your time or your love or your whatever. So So they say, be full within and be complete within. And with that right knowledge, you can understand that you are of the nature of fullness. And then all these negativities very quickly will vanish. Why would you be selfish? Because you say that the Lord in me is the Lord in all. There is only one. Then immediately you feel they're all my brothers and sisters. There won't be any selfishness. There won't be any greed. There won't be any jealousy. There won't be any anger, likes, dislikes. So as we get this knowledge, that's why they say, nahi gyanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate. Last week we had talked about that. 2 weeks ago, there is no greater purifier than knowledge. Having the right knowledge is the only way to purify your mind. So this I'll stop here, and we have time for some questions. If people can come up with more impurities, that will be good. We can list those here. But any comments, any questions? Yes. So
when Jesus was in the temple and he found the money changers in there gambling and charging interest, he got really angry and he threw them out and turned over the tables. Would that be classified as a righteous anger rather than a selfish type of anger?
Yeah, that is one thing. If you see these realized masters or these prophets, they may at times show anger just to correct the other person, to make that person better, for that other person's improvement. But internally, they are not disturbed. See, that is the difference between us and a realized master. When I get angry or when you get angry at somebody, the anger stays with us for 2 days, 3 days, and we keep dwelling upon it. But a wise person, when he or she gets angry, they get over it just like that. They get angry to correct somebody, and then immediately they're back to their sweet self. And the next person comes, they talk to them so lovingly that the person won't even know that a minute ago he had thrown that table. As soon as Jesus came out of that room, he would be back to his original sweet self. Same way Swami Chinmayananda, the founder of our mission, especially when the mission was being established and, you know, he had to get people to do the way he wanted and set it up and all that. And so at times he did have to use anger, but he would use it. He used to say, anger I keep in my pocket. I take it out and then I can put it back in. So you can call it righteous anger, but yeah, it is done for the benefit of the others. But internally that person's calm and equanimity is not disturbed. So that is the kind of anger that you're talking about. Yes.
Think about it. That was a
true, yeah. No, that's true. Because then it makes you say that as important as that is, mm-hmm. that important is for me to watch and make a list of my negativities and how they are bringing me down. So sit down and maybe tonight or tomorrow do that as a homework. Sit down and list honestly that these are the things, places where I need to work at and to improve. Because we are all on the spiritual path and these impurities weigh us down and we cannot progress as fast as we like. We work and it's like the rock is pulling us back, you know. We want to go up in the balloon, soar high in the clouds and go meet with our maker, but this, you know, big rock is holding me down. So once you know that, then you want as soon as possible to get rid of that rock. Cut it.
Shy of things. I'm wondering where the fallen likes and dislikes. Where does fear come?
I think fear comes from two or three ways. One of the main reasons fear comes is when you see two. I'm not afraid of myself. I mean, generally, you know, most people are not afraid of themselves. You're not afraid of your hand or your leg or your nose because they're all me. But the moment there is somebody else who is not me, that's when fear comes. It could be another person, it could be an object, it could be a situation, it could even be a mental thing, you know, fear. So one is, it comes out of not knowing the one. But if you know that there is one reality, that is everybody, is all that oneness, that is what Jesus and Buddha and all these great saints saw, the oneness. They loved all. That's why Jesus said, love thy neighbor as thyself. So once you see that oneness, then the fear is not there. That is number one. Number two, sometimes people have fear because of insecurities in the mind, which may have been due from childhood. You know, maybe you are fearful of the dark or fearful of being alone or fearful of heights. or fearful of some challenging situations where you can't face. And a lot of them have their basis in childhood, in, you know, whatever problems you had or whatever. So by recognizing and trying to go to the source, that from where does this fear originate, once you go to the source and realize that this is, then you realize that at the bottom there is nothing. There is, it's not, does not have any substance. Most of the time our fears are without, you know, substance. Of course, if somebody is coming at me with a gun, that's a different story. But the majority of the time, the fears we have are insubstantial. They are not real. They are self-created, or they are, at least, I don't know with this, without specific examples, but a lot of times the fears are like, are based on insecurity. So when you go to the base of that, then you realize that fear is not. And another thing is chanting the name of the Lord, because one of the Lord's names is Abhayapradam. That means one who grants fearlessness. And that is one of the very beautiful. So chanting the name of God, and I found that because I, you know, since I started in the past few years trying to remember the Lord as often as possible, chant his name and think about him, I have become a lot more fearless than I used to be. Yeah? And so it gives you courage by knowing that he is with me at all times. So remember him as the giver of fearlessness, Abhayapradam. That is actually Shiva's name, one of his names, but is the name of all the gods. Chanting the name of God will remove your fears, I think. I don't know if I'm able to help or not, but yes, yes, yes. Again, loneliness comes from, again, from insecurity. Because I feel that I am incomplete. I myself am incomplete, and I need another person to make me complete. So that's so-called loneliness, that, oh, I am all alone. If only I could find a husband, or if only I could find a friend, or if I only could find someone to go to the movies with me or go out to dinner. So loneliness comes out of a feeling of incompleteness, that I am somehow incomplete, and by getting that person with me, I would become complete. But when I am comfortable within myself, and again, that comes from right knowledge, from right understanding, from contemplation, when we hear that you are that, you know, infinite being, you are that infinite consciousness, and by understanding upon it, and also by regular meditation and by chanting the name of the Lord, you slowly, slowly discover an inner strength and inner peace. The Prabhoji who comes here from San Jose calls it an inner immunity. Just as we have, you know, bugs from outside come and affect us. But once you take a vaccine, then you say, I am immune to the flu. Now the flu cannot affect me. So similarly, once you get that inner immunity through regular prayer, meditation, chanting of the name of the Lord, and with the right understanding, then slowly, slowly you say, I am fine. I am okay. I am totally happy by myself. I can sit and read. I can sit and contemplate. I can even go to the movies. So that comfort of being alone, and if you look at these saints and great prophets, they were alone. They lived alone. They didn't have any companions or any friends or anybody. They just traveled and wandered, and everywhere they were. And they felt fine. In fact, there is a very nice book in the office. It's called Jivan Muktanand Lahiri, that the qualities of a realized master. It's written a very small booklet. And it says this wise person, one day he may be in the company of youngsters at a fair, you know, at a county fair, and everybody's riding on the rides and eating the food, and he's enjoying with them, he or she, you know, the wise person. The next day, that person is traveling from one village to another and one city, and along the way, there is nobody. There is a forest. And he's walking there, and then there is the riverbank. And he's tired, and it's nighttime, and he falls asleep on the stones beside the riverbank all alone. And he's equally fine. He does not get disturbed. He was fine with those children when he was playing with them in the fair. And even when he's alone and lying on the riverbank, and there is nobody, and it's dark, and he is perfectly fine. So it comes from the, and ultimately, who is with us? Everybody comes alone and leaves alone. Everybody came alone. Nobody came with you when you were born, and nobody is going to go with you when you die. The only one with us is the Lord, is God, our, you know, our inner self. So once you realize that God is with me at all times, then I don't feel lonely. Then I'm fine. Then such a person can be alone and can still be comfortable. So I think by working at it and realizing that I do not need another one to make me complete, I am fine the way I am. And once you are that, and once you are comfortable with yourself, then you will find that you will attract other people. Other people will be attracted to you automatically because they will see within you something special, something that is more, something that they want. So I think it starts from the inner incompleteness or completeness. Unless anybody has any other ideas about loneliness.
I think that many times people live a fear-based life because their mind has been damaged by emotions before their intellect had the capacity to control the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes such a deep impression on them that either they never realized what happened, or it takes a long time for them to have the intellect heal the mind.
Right. True. Yeah. So the problems have developed for many, many years, but knowing that, okay, it happened to me in childhood, I don't need to still carry it. Say you went through a bad childhood where you were mistreated or whatever, unfortunately. But letting that incident, okay, it's over now, why should I still carry that baggage? You know, just heal yourself. I mean, some people go to psychologists, psychiatrists, take drugs and all. But I find the best healing comes from within, by turning within to the Lord's presence. He's the supreme healer, and surrendering to the Lord, and just some people even do that, like a light a fire, you know, and in that fire they will put a paper with all their negativities. In fact, at one of the camps in Pierce in Northern California, that's what they did. They lit a fire. It was very cold, and everybody walked around the fire, and they, in a piece of paper, they wrote their negativity. Somebody had anger, somebody had greed, somebody had selfishness, somebody had loneliness, all those negativities. You say, okay, I'm going to write them on a piece of paper and throw them in the fire and burn them. The idea is that, like he said, let your intellect get over that, and with the right understanding, drop them in that fire and burn it. So there are various techniques, whatever works for whoever.